Let's get in. Y'all ready to get into the word today? If you're ready, let me hear you say, I'm ready. Okay. So I'm going to read to you from Colossians chapter 3, and then I'm going to read a narrative from Matthew chapter 18. Colossians chapter 3 is going to be our key text for the series, The Path Less Traveled. We're choosing forgiveness. Colossians 3:13 in the New King James Version says this: bearing with one another and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you must do. So last week we learned this, that forgiveness is not a suggestion, it's not an option, it's not a luxury, it's a Bible command. Our assignment from the head of the church is to forgive others, whether we feel like it, whether we want to. It is a Bible command to forgive. And I said this to you last week, that this is the really good news, that Jesus will never ask you to forgive someone more than he's forgiven you. Is that good news or what? He'll never ask that of us. And what last week we wanted to make this kind of opportunity that we would learn to be quick to forgive or grow in our forgiveness of others and be quick to do it. Last week, the message was titled, By 7:31 p.m. How many of you know this? The Bible says that we are to be angry and not sin, and that the sun should not go down on our wrath or our anger. Last Sunday, the sun set at 7:31, and so the assignment was forgive and get it all out of you before 7:31 p.m. And so we want to be quick to forgive. We want to understand forgiveness. We talked a lot last week about what forgiveness is not. Let me do that real quick. Let me go over what forgiveness is not, and I'll just read them, and then we'll move forward. Forgiveness is not forgetting. Forgiveness is not condoning. Forgiveness isn't weakness. Forgiveness isn't always immediate. Forgiveness isn't conditional. Forgiveness isn't reconciliation. Forgiveness isn't giving up your right to justice. Forgiveness isn't dependent on the other person's cooperation. Let me just expound on that for a minute. You don't have to have someone else's permission to forgive them. Let me say it to you differently. You can forgive someone against their will. They don't have to agree. Forgiveness isn't a one-time act. It's something you'll have to do over and over and over. Before I read Matthew chapter 18, I want to remind you of something that Jesus said that applies to forgiveness. He says this. Jesus says that in this world, you will have trials, tests. He also says this in one passage, that offenses will come to you. Turn to your neighbor and say, you're going to be having an opportunity to be offended. Go ahead and tell them. Not necessarily now in the next few minutes, just in life, all right? But maybe in the next few minutes. I don't know. Let me say something about offense. If I offend you, watch this. If I offend you, then I need to ask for your forgiveness and I need to apologize. I need to make it right if I offend you. But watch this. If I tell you what the word says and you're offended at the word, then you need to ask God for forgiveness, for being offended at his truth. That's a big difference. Jesus said offense would come. And watch this. That's a promise. How many have that promise of Jesus hanging up on your refrigerator? You got all other kinds of promises that God's going to meet my needs and God's going to come through for me. God's going to get me out of tight spots. God's going to bless my family. Nobody's got the promise offense would come. But I want to suggest to you that over the next few weeks as we're leading up to Easter, that you keep this promise in front of you. Offenses will come. Why? Because if you try to avoid offenses, what you're going to end up doing is you're going to avoid life. Offenses will come. They're going to come over and over and over again. I can't promise you that you're going to get any mail tomorrow. I don't know if you're going to get a FedEx delivery or Amazon. Some of you already got an Amazon delivery this morning because you ordered it last night and you wanted it here between 4 a.m. and 8 a.m. before you got to church this morning. Who ordered something last night and got it on the porch this morning? Somebody? No? Oh, yeah, there's somebody. All right, praise. Good for somebody. A lot of those people are watching online. I'm going to tell you that much right now. They watch it online. I don't know if Amazon's going to come. I don't know if FedEx is going to show up. But I'm telling you, as sure as I'm standing here, you are going to have marvelous opportunities to look past offenses. Because Jesus said they would come. Now, why is that important? That's important because the longer you live, the more types of things become potential to offend you. Because as you age, you form opinions. You form beliefs. You get set in ways. And the longer you live, the more types of offenses you have to look past. It is impossible. It's impossible to hide from them, to dodge them, to avoid them. Everywhere you go, you're going to run into offenses. Some of you are waiting for the day when offenses disappear. Nope, don't wait for that day. Get ready for it by determining in your heart, preemptively deciding, I'm going to be quick to forgive because somebody's going to offend me maybe before I get out of the building this morning. And just determine in your mind that you are unoffendable. Unoffendable. But you know what so many of us do? We look forward to being offended. Oh, I can't wait until I get offended because then I can talk to so-and-so and that's going to help me feel like they really love me. Because if we can be offended about the same thing together, then it's like a massive party. Like we can just all be angry and we can all hold a grudge and we can all be resentful and bitter together because misery loves company. Do you know that's not a Bible verse? That ought not be a pattern for your living. It shouldn't be. You ought to just determine, I don't care what they say politically at the Easter table, I'm not going to be offended. I'm going to quickly forgive them silently in my head so that they don't hear me, and I'm just going to look past a whole bunch of stuff because I need to be quick to forgive, because Jesus promised it. Somebody in this room needs to print it out on a piece of paper and put it on your mirror in the bathroom, or get some lipstick or one of those erasable markers and write it right there where you get ready in the morning. Offenses are on the way. Oh, I don't want to believe for those things. It don't matter if you believe in for them. They're coming. The head of the church said so. Why? To warn you, to prepare your heart position, to not fall for the trap that the enemy wants to get you stuck in so that then it harms you, not the other person. Everywhere you go, you're going to run into offenses. You have to understand this. Listen to this very carefully. You have to understand this. Your ability, every young person, listen to what I'm saying. Every middle-aged person, listen to what I'm saying. Every person who is fixing to retire or already retired, listen to what I'm saying. How you handle being offended is going to determine the direction of your life for the next decade. It is. Look at what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 18. I'm going to read from verse 21 all the way to verse 35. That's going to be on screen for you. They just get talking about, let me give you the context. They just get done talking about, Jesus gets done teaching them about, watch this, how to deal with sin in the church. How do we deal with it? That's the context that he just finishes talking about. And then verse 21, we'll pick it up. So they hear about how to deal with sin. And Peter comes to Jesus and asks, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Peter, I think he thinks he was being big and bad and bold. Up to seven times? Like a big number that's gonna throw Jesus off and like say, ooh, look at Peter. He's really very spiritual, very spiritual. Up to seven times. I think he thought he was gonna get an attaboy. And Jesus says this, he answers, he said, I tell you this, not seven times, but 70 times 7. Let me pause there and I'll come back to this text. When Jesus is teaching this, the disciples are saying, how do we handle this? Shall I forgive my brother seven times? Jesus says in another passage, it's been said to forgive 70 times 70. Well, you and I can do the math, right? We can do that math. I don't think Jesus is doing math for us. He's making a point. And the point he's making is forgiveness needs to become a perpetual thing in our life. It's not just one and done. It's over and over and over again. He's trying to say, I want you to be perpetual about this. As soon as you get offended, throw it off. As soon as you get offended, throw it off. As soon as you get offended, throw it off. And throw it off again and again and again and again. And as soon as you learn to do this, here's what happens. You stop the collection, buildup, and corrosion spiritually on the inside of you, and it stops you from becoming a toxic person. Let's go back to the text and keep reading. Therefore, now he's going to give us a parable. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And as he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. And since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that they had be sold to repay the debt. And at this, the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged. I will pay everything back. The servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, forgave him, and let him go. But that servant went out, and he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. And he grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell on his knees and begged him, be patient with me and I will pay it back. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. And when the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said. I canceled all that debt. I forgave you of all that because you begged me to. Punchline, you're ready for it? Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? Pause. What's the answer to the master's question there? Should he have had the same level of forgiveness on the person who owed him? He should have. And in his anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart. That's intense. Let me show you a visual example of this. I think we have this on screen because I did the math and I want you to see the images of some money. Let me show you the proportion of forgiveness, if you would please. So guys, if you could put do we have the money slide? The picture of the money? There we go. That right there is $1 million, all in $100 bills. That's a million, all right? The next one is 100 million. That's 100 million. All right? Now, visually, the next one is a billion. So let's go to the billion. That is quite literally a stack of cash. That's a billion. I want you to see this because I did the math in the conversion. The servant whose debt was forgiven much of those X amount of bags of gold, 6 bags of gold, 10 bags of gold, whatever it was, is today the modern equivalent of approximately $6 billion. $6 billion was that man's debt that was forgiven, wiped out. The servant who had his debt forgiven of much went to a man who in today's calculations owed him just under $12,000 and wouldn't forgive it. To me, the smaller amount that he refused to forgive makes this man an unmerciful servant. And the thing that this highlights is the stark contrast between the immense gift that the king forgave and what the unmerciful servant refused to give is the picture of the debt that Jesus has set us free from, but then compare and contrast to when we won't let someone go for what they did for us. How many of you would agree that the man was unreasonable who was forgiven of $6 billion but wouldn't let the man go for $12,000? How many think that's unreasonable? The same is the picture when we don't forgive those who have offended us. Jesus taught that. Now here's what I want to say to you. Whatever they did, whoever they were that did it, that whoever it was, whatever it was, I want you to understand this. It is not worth it to allow your history to abort your destiny. You should not allow your history to abort your, you should not let something that happened in the past rob you of your future, to sabotage your promises, to end what God said he would do in your life. You got to be able to shake that stuff off and move on. Last week we talked about this, that you can't only breathe air in, you've got to be able to exhale. You can't have a gas-powered vehicle without it having an exhaust pipe. You can't eat without eliminating it. And whatever you do, you have to be able to take in and let it out. Somebody talk back to me. What happens if you stop breathing? You die, right? We understand that. We understand that very clearly, right? Here's the challenge. We understand in a lot of ways that everything we do is meant to take in and take out. Here's the problem. You have a system for elimination in every area of your life except your heart. And you have got to build a system of forgiveness. Why do we have trouble doing it? Why do we have difficulty receiving it? Why do we have trouble believing that God could forgive others but not forgive us? Why do we have trouble being able to express it? I think the reason why is we live in a society that celebrates people for being unforgiving and angry. The impression that I seem to have is that the world rewards people who are tough and hard on the exterior and who can hold a grudge. We look at holding a grudge and being unforgiving as powerful, as in control, as in a strength position. But I need you to understand something. The reality is it takes way more strength to let someone go than it does to hold them hostage in your heart. Because when you hold them hostage in your heart, you're the prisoner, not them. It does not affect them. They don't, I have to, listen to me. The people that you're mad at, 70% don't know and don't care. The other 30% are glad that you are, because they got their way. Right? This picture that Jesus gives us of the master who forgave this big debt and the unmerciful servant who wouldn't let go of the little debt, the small debt, is a picture for us. I need you to understand this. Forgiveness is a big idea. Forgiveness is a great big idea. It's a tall idea. And you've got to be a big person to do it. In other words, big people forgive, small people hold grudges. Now, I'm not talking about your physical stature. You understand that. I'm talking about the difference between the person on the inside of you. It takes a big person to forgive. Small people don't do it. They're too small on the inside. They're too petty. They're too sensitive. They're too easily offended. Forgiveness is a big idea, and you have to be a big person in order to embrace it. Forgiveness is a big idea for people who can see the big picture, who can see beyond the battle and see the war. Why do we have a hard time doing it? I think one of the reasons why we have a hard time doing it is because we're wrapped up in our past and we're tied to the way we saw our parents and our grandparents do it. And we function monkey see, monkey do. You just repeat history. If your dad would shut down and avoid and walk out of the house and get in the car and go to a hotel and stay there overnight until things smoothed out, you might have the tendency when you grow up to do the same thing, to avoid. Why? Because you saw it. This is what I want to say to you. No one is born with an unforgiving nature. You never met a six-month-old that holds a grudge. A few days ago, Angie was watching Charlie, and I'd forgot something at home, and I went back home, and I like went through that house like I was breaking in, like I was trying to steal something. I was in a hurry, and I just slammed through that door, and I didn't know it, but Charlie was right on the other side reaching up, and I almost knocked that kid plumb out. I mean, I almost cried, guys. I mean, I was sick. I mean, she was crying and wailing and going on, and I felt awful about it. But you know, I don't know if you saw or not, but I was holding her during worship. She didn't look at me and say, "That's the dude that walked me with the door. I'm not going anywhere near him." Listen. I need you to understand this. Being an unforgiving grudge holder, it's a learned, acquired behavior. And if you learned it, you can unlearn it. And I want you to hold in your mind that picture of what that man was forgiven and what he refused to forgive. Forgiveness, guys, is not an idea that alleviates the perpetrator of responsibility. It's not about the perpetrator. It's not about the person. It's about liberating you, the victim. That's what it's about. It says, when you abused me that time, that was your fault. But when I continue to regurgitate and talk about and spread it to myself and others, then it's my fault. Now that might be offensive, but when you don't let that thing go, it messes you up. I was having a conversation, this bears repeating if I repeat it, but I was having a conversation with a person and I had some stuff in my life that had really bothered me, and I was talking about it over and over and over again. That's what I'm talking about, regurgitating it verbally. They said to me, they said, you need to stop talking about that. I said that to you, I think, last week, but I want to say it to you this week as an action step. There's some stuff, church, that you've been talking about what hurt you for too long, and today's the day that you need to choose. I'd love to see you choose today to be the day you stop talking about it. You just don't verbalize it anymore. You don't give it any more airtime. You just shut it down. You just stop it, and you watch how that thing loses its grip on your life when you quit giving voice to it. You'll find out that they're not gonna ever let you go. But here's the deal. You don't need them to let you go. You can let yourself go. Jesus set it up so that you can cut yourself out of those binds. He set it up so that you could have the key to open up those locks and chains. You don't need anyone's permission to go free. It's a matter of you deciding today, I'm tired of that thing being attached to me. I'm tired of living in the residue of it. I'm tired of living in the toxicity of it. I'm gonna let that person, I'm gonna let that thing go once and for all. I'm gonna do it today. And listen, you want to clap? You can. Listen, you can do it. It doesn't mean, watch this. Forgiveness doesn't mean I agree with you. It doesn't mean I think you were right. It isn't conceding that they were the correct party. It doesn't mean that you were flawless. Here's what it means. It means I have too much in front of me to let the stuff that's behind me keep me trapped 1 minute, 1 second, 1 moment longer. There's too much in front of me that I don't need to be bound by all that stuff. That whom the Son sets free, He really set free indeed. Woo! Daniel, come and help me. This is what it means to have the burden of bitterness, is that you're weighed down by it, not them. Let me fast forward because I'm out of time. The last couple things I want to say to you. Write this down if you're taking notes. This is a little off the subject, but this is when you step out of the burden of bitterness and step into the life of forgiveness. Here's what you'll find. Write this down. God will promote you to the level of your tolerance for pain. I'm going to say it again. God will promote you to the level of your tolerance for pain. In other words, if you can't take the pain, you won't go any higher in God. You'll go as high as your threshold of pain will allow. Somebody needs to know this, that when you pray for a promotion at work, here's what you're praying for. You're praying for problems to come up on your desk. When you're asking God to bless your business and make it bigger, you're praying, you don't know this, but you're praying for more problems to show up on your front door. See, people got it wrong. They think promotion means less work, but promotion in God means more. The corporate world understands this, that people get paid based on the level of problems they can solve and pain they can endure. That's what he's saying in this parable. He's saying the unmerciful servant, his pain threshold was $12,000. The master's pain threshold was $6 billion. It's about a tolerance for pain. If you can't take it, you won't be promoted. You can't handle it. You're too sensitive. You can't have it. You pass on your stress to everybody else. In the process, God doesn't promote that person. He promotes the person who handles stress like an adult and figures it out, believes God, and doesn't pass it on to everybody around them and freak everybody else out around them. Like it doesn't work where God doesn't put people who are all pinned up in stress and can't handle pain in levels of leadership and roles of leadership, because then they end up being a drug dispenser just trying to chill everybody out because they're passing it on and they're disrupting. A person that God promotes is able to handle the problems, solve the problems. The less you have responsibility for, isn't this how it works? That your job, they pay you for the level of responsibility you have. That's what they do. And I'm saying this to say this. Some of you are wondering why you've only progressed so far. This is where you might get offended, okay? But God, write this down if you're taking notes. God does not give big things to small people. God does not give big things to small people. They cannot handle it. It is a nightmare to give a big thing to a small person. A small person walks around with their chest stuck out, looking important, proud, but never do nothing. You ever been around those people? They act like they're big and bad, but they can't get it across the finish line. They're not producing anything. They're power tripping. They got Napoleon complex times two. They're the haters. They hate on what you're doing. They criticize what you're up to. And what they need to do is two things. Number one, you need to forgive them and realize they don't have a life. Their life is wrapped up in criticizing what you're doing. And those are the people that you need to forgive. Those are the people you need to let go of. Those are the people you need to move past. Let me put it to you in Bible language, because some of you all need a Bible verse. I've talked too long without quoting a verse and you're getting weirded out. Let me give it to you this way. The Bible says it this way. To whom much is given, much is required. Much is required. The higher you go, the more you're going to have to confront every day and have to be able to handle the temptation to be offended. Here's what I'm going to say as I finish. You're blessed. Say it out loud. Say, I'm blessed. We are a blessed. We are a blessed people. We are created in Christ Jesus. We have been created uniquely and individually in Christ. In other words, there's never been another you. Thank God. Never been another you. Never gonna be another you. 1,000 years before this moment, there was never a you. 1,000 years from now, there's never gonna be another person like you. They can walk like you. They can try to talk like you. They can try to dress like you. They can try to wear their hair like you. But they're never going to be you. You are a designer's original. Years ago, when we were doing some sweatshirts, the staff got to design their own sweatshirt, and I designed my own, and I brought it home. And my son saw it, my youngest son, Alex, saw it, and he said, "Ooh, Dad, I like that sweatshirt. Where can I get me one of those sweatshirts?" I said, "You can't." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "This is the only one." He said, "Ooh, it's one of one?" That was his phrase, "It's one of one?" I said, "It's one of one." That thing disappeared out of my closet. Ladies and gentlemen, you are one of one. You are one of one. You were created by a creator in his likeness. We were created in his likeness. This is the call to action. You're the only one that can do it, because you're the only one that exists. Will you choose to be unoffendable? Will you choose to walk the path less traveled? Will you choose to be quick to forgive? Will you remember how much you were forgiven and realize that if I measure that against to what has been done to me, what has been done to me is so small in comparison to offense as what I have done to my Creator, I'm going to just go ahead and let that person go and walk free.